It's about truth. It's about information. It's about awesomeness.
What did he say?
What did he say?
All the major internets do that.
Well, this is where we are.
Let me say it this way.
This is the Brian Suits Show.
As always, calling for calm. That's what we do. Call for an end to gun violence. This is just stuff that has to stop. Calling for calm is what we're doing here. I am 770 KTTH. Yeah, but David Petraeus. Yeah, but Hillary Clinton server. Yeah, but what do those two have in common with probably the absolute huge majority of Americans? I'll tell you what that is here in just a second. Also, what better way to wake up on Sunday morning on Beacon Hill than with flashbangs? Seattle SWAT ending a standoff that way. We'll get to all that. And finally, you can take that Rottweiler back to the pound and stop chaining him to your car overnight, because the crime ring that is stealing all the catalytic converters has been rounded up. We'll be back right after this. AM 770 KTTH. Brian Sincere, let's get you to work with the right way traffic. Brian Suits here. I went down the YouTube hole of what are the metals that are in catalytic converters. I mean, how much is there that, you know, is so much that it makes it worth it to people to spend their lives doing nothing but stealing yours? Platinum, which is a deal. Palladium and rhodium are big ones. Gold can also be used in certain cars. And if you want to go on YouTube and find out how to extract them, you can.
Yeah, platinum's around $800, $900 per ounce.
Crazy. And then when you see how many ounces are in a catalytic converter, if you've never had to replace one, you'll find that they're pretty expensive. But it's based on, part of it's based on the price of those metals when the catalytic converter was made. Not what it's worth now, and makes me want to take a sawzall and start. But of course, I never would, because I'm not interested in a life of crime. Police in suburban Portland say last Thursday that they arrested a crime ring leader responsible for trafficking more than 44,000 catalytic converters stolen from vehicles on the West Coast since 2021. This would be Brennan Doyle, a 32-year-old lazy person, except that he's a good organizer, leader of the operation, and it went all up and down the West Coast, from Bellingham to Northern California. That's why the guy lived in Lake Oswego, which is the Portland Mercer Island, or Medina, or Hunts Point, or whatever. Anyway, they searched his Lake Oswego home last week, along with seven other properties. The detective seized 3,000 catalytic converters at his house, hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, a high-end car, and jewelry. Police have identified one suspect, but are still searching for another. And here's the deal. They were renting. Well, what they were doing here was they're stealing your catalytic converter and then storing it in the garage. And this guy or his confederates would literally rent a U-Haul or, you know, name, you know, truck rental place here. And they would go on a route and they would go up to Bellingham and pick him up there and then fill it on their way down and then take him down to Portland. And because I was wondering, well, who are these salvage yards that are taking catalytic converters? Why don't you just go to those guys that pay the cash? No. Overwhelmingly, they're legit, honest places, and they don't have the wherewithal to extract the metal. They're just salvage yards, like pick and pull or actual, you know, car crushing places and all that. All you need is a subject matter expert, and that's what this guy had down in Oregon. So they were driving down to Redding and picking up catalytic converters from the California, from Southern Oregon, and all that. Now, I mean, it's not to say that yours is not going to be stolen tonight, because it's there's still people out there doing this. This wasn't the only catalytic converter ring. Just that this guy was the most organized, and he kind of had territories. And so authorities speculate that you may see if there's no one to come to your house and pay you per catalytic converter. And then if you steal it, and you're not a metallurgist, a metallurgical engineer or whatever, and you can't extract it, you're going to sell it, right, to the guy who is there for it for cash. So they were paying the thieves, the retail thieves, about $100 per catalytic converter. So that's why you had, you know, people that could do it really quickly, and they were doing 3, 4, 5, 6 a night, you know, maybe making $1,000. And when I've had two replaced on the same car, and your catalytic converter, by the way, your automobile should go about 150,000 miles before that ever is an issue. But I had one stolen, and then its replacement was put on badly, and it turned out to be stolen. And so I know intimately that the replacing it with an OEM catalytic converter would have been about $1,200, $1,200 or $1,300. I should have known when the guy said, "Oh no, bro, for you $750," and that is, of course, the accent most associated with Montana. And so there's a lot of money in those things now, and that's why there's a wave of stealing them. And
I haven't heard a viable plan, though, to really curb this mass thievery when it comes to catalytic converters.
I think this is the best plan is because of the economy
bust
of scale.
These guys.
Well, like I say, the guy paying for the little minions to go do it, if you get him, and theoretically that's what they've done down in Oregon, is get the Fagin of Oliver Twist, if you will, and all these little Artful Dodgers and Oliver Twists crawl. Like, the one dude in Bellevue was physically tiny, and so he was getting under cars that normally you wouldn't get under. That's why my story, my folksy anecdote that localizes me from a couple weeks ago about the used car lot, where the guy was saying, he was pointing to cars, to trucks, I should say, that were lifted, and he was saying, yeah, that one's been hit twice, that one was hit once, but it was last night. And he was talking about, when he said hit, he meant catalytic converter stolen. I'm like, a truck's been hit twice, and you're telling me this? What? No, because when the higher the clearance, or the more clearance, the easier it is to get under there. And, you know, something like a little Kia, that tiny little Kia, you know, the hamster car, it's hard to get under there. And that's when you see those stories where the car owner came out and found a pair of legs under their car, unmoving. And, you know, this has happened up and down the West Coast where people are, like, working by themselves, and they'll have a bottle jack, a hydraulic jack. It'll get under the car, start working, and what they're not seeing is that the thing is slowly letting pressure out, and they're dying. They're getting crushed under the car. Of course, it's tragic. Don't get me wrong.
I have a story from over the weekend. Perhaps it fits into the folksy anecdote category that highlights just how helpless so many of us law-abiding citizens feel. Let me cue it up with this music here.
Folksy anecdote from Greg.
That highlights lawlessness and thievery and robbery. My wife was at our local QFC, had to pick up a few items for some charcuterie boards that she was going to make.
Oh.
Usually not a very eventful trip.
Pinky out.
Historically. But as she's going through each aisle, she notices a man who might be described as a vagrant or someone, you know, don't rush to judgment, okay? Never judge a book by its cover. But he's dirty, right? His arms are blackened from, you know, not having taken a shower in months, perhaps. And he's also wheeling around a shopping cart that is full to the brim, overflowing with items. And my wife thinks to herself, I'm not sure how he's going to pay for this, but nevertheless,
he's not either, right?
Probably not going to end well. So she just kind of keeps a safe distance from him, and she pays for her items and leaves. And all of a sudden she looks, and out of the corner of their eye, this guy is running out of the QFC with no items in hand, but clearly tweaking on something. I don't know if that's the colloquial term, but he's on some type of substance, and he's very erratic and frantic. And he starts going around to cars in the parking lot near my wife and just pulling on door handles, just as quick as he can, running car to car to car. Most of them are locked. And then he's able to get open the trunk of this one car and just starts rummaging through stuff in the back. And my wife.
And this is broad daylight.
Broad daylight on a Sunday afternoon.
God's country renting?
Sunday afternoon. And not in a shady part of town, like typical everyday grocery store that lots of people in our neighborhood frequent. And she thinks to herself about calling the cops, but she's tried this before.
Oh, yeah.
And the cops basically just go, what do you want us to do about it? So she just witnesses it happen and goes, well, I feel really bad for that person's car that's being totally jacked right now and all their items inside are being stolen. But what can you do about it? And she just drives home. And this stuff would have been completely out of the realm of possibility for the first 30, 40 years of our lives. But we've seen a number of these incidents in the past year to the point where it's not anecdotal anymore.
No.
It's like being chalked up to data.
And it's funny because people always ask, well, I mean, you know, what can we do about it? And I say, well, first of all, it has to collapse before it can be rebuilt. This entire area, this is what happens. As it turns out, they call it the thin blue line for a reason. And it's thinner than you think. And you're seeing it right now. The thin veneer of what we call civilization is being eroded right in front of us. For every cop that signs for their final check at Seattle PD, Tacoma PD, King County Sheriff, or whatever, and heads east, to Idaho, Montana, or somewhere rational, we lose a little more civility in what used to be a very, very civil town. And the one day when there's no more kids left in Seattle School District, and your home value is falling through the floor, who are you going to blame? Seattle police or councilperson Sawant? Because those are the people, the elected people are the ones selling you and your home values down the river. So, I mean, what do you think about where this homeless guy that Greg's describing, about the neighborhood that he's from? Is it worth more or less than last year? So that's just your personal gain. I mean, never mind, you know, the registered sex offenders that have slipped parole that are living in a alder grove along the Duwamish River, you know, or something like that. You know, there's not enough cops to chase them down if there was a warrant. And there is a warrant. So that's good news. Good news, Brian. Great job. Well, okay. But on the bright side, I'm calling for an end to gun violence. Back in a second, AM 770 KTTH, explosions heard in Kabul. That and more. Let's get you to work with our right way traffic.
I want it all, and I want it now.
Know it all. First thing.
First thing. My favorite baseball team won with a walk-off home run yesterday. So that was cool. It's always fun.
Your Giants?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Los Gigantes with the walk-off home run.
I'm happy for you.
There's probably plenty of catalytic converter thieves around, but as I was just saying, one of the largest rings they suspect on the West Coast has been taken down. And the Mr. Big, the head, lives in Lake Oswego, which is a very, very tony part of your Portland area. Thing two.
Second thing.
Where was the story? Home values are going down here in America. You heard that. But this is crazy. If you're unaware of this, because second thing, we'll get to the crazy. This will be thing four if we get to it. Second thing, explosions heard in Kabul. Today is the one-year anniversary of basically VA Day. If you're wondering, yes, the Taliban think they won. And why would they think that? I mean, they're just in possession of Afghanistan and stuff. It marks the one-year anniversary of the chaotic, to be generous, the chaotic exit from Afghanistan that cost the lives of 13 service people, 12 Marines and a soldier and I believe an airman. And the Taliban are busy having a parade because they, oh, by the way, what do you think they're driving in? Anyone? Yes, Humvees and MRAPs, everything we left behind. So there's that. So explosions have been heard because ISIS in Afghanistan disagree with the Taliban. And they think that the Taliban maybe should should screw off. They're old men. What do they know? And the whole thing. And if you're unaware that the irony of going from a 20-year insurgency to the government, to becoming the government and utterly failing by any measure, by absolutely every measure from the rational Western world. And then, oh, by the way, having to fight an insurgency because the everything that Newsweek and Time and Daily Beast got on America for 20 years and our whatever our brutal counterinsurgency methods. Apparently, the Taliban happened to feel they were very effective. Only, unlike us, the Taliban get to go into villages that are disloyal and just kill all the men. See, we don't do that because we don't even have that rule book. It's nowhere in the Pentagon. It's not like they forgot it in Petraeus's office or something. It never was there. But the Taliban don't have a rule book. The weird part is all week long when I was hearing like BBC, which I listened to on a thing and all that, their entire focus was women's rights and little girls going to school. It's like, why is that? Why are you're talking as if you're surprised? I mean, they said who they were. They said all through the 90s who they were. And not only that, but they love Al-Qaeda. As well, and they don't believe that women should be in school, period. This, by the way, it's a major debate inside the Taliban, the fact that they've allowed women's schools up to fifth or sixth grade to exist. It's a huge debate. The older people are like, well, if you're going to let them be in sixth grade, why not let them be in eighth or ninth grade? What are you, crazy? This is nuts. So the phenomena that's happening in Afghanistan is that sixth grade girls are flunking sixth grade so they can repeat sixth grade. That's then the Taliban are onto them. But if that is not the saddest, most predictable thing that you've heard in 20 years out of Afghanistan, then I don't know what it is. But little girls are intentionally flunking. The parents are flunking them. They're not turning in homework so that they can repeat sixth grade. So there you go. There's that. Anyway, if you want to reelect that foreign policy, you'll have a chance in 2024. Thing three.
Third thing.
Speaking of Salman Rushdie, apparently he's going to live. He possibly will lose an eye. Or should I say Joseph Anton? That was his code name. Right? Probably will still be his code name. That was the name of his autobiography a couple of years ago. Salman Rushdie was attacked by an agent of the Iranian government here in the United States. That's that. The guy had a fake driver's license that used the name of a prominent Hezbollah commander. He had a cell phone full of pictures of his beloved General Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in January of 2020, the former head of the state-funded terror organization called Quds Force. This would be the terror organization that has an airline, gigantic bank accounts in Switzerland, et cetera, and has sent sleepers into the United States. And so it's not a coincidence, by the way, sort of lost over the weekend in the Salman Rushdie coverage is that remember the State Department broke the story about the plot, the $300,000 bounty on Bolton, the $1 million bounty on Mike Pompeo, who greenlit the slicing and dicing of Qasem Soleimani. And then now this. And I mean, I'm here to tell you, they're closing out old accounts is what they're doing. Salman Rushdie has been an open account since he had the temerity to blaspheme the Prophet Muhammad. So clearly, in a fiction novel, so clearly any rational religion would call for his death. And, I call for an end to gun violence, but not for Salman Rushdie's death. And
that's, if one thing we know about Islamic extremists, they do not forget a fatwa.
No.
This was issued in 1989,
yeah.
And 33 years later,
I remember,
this guy jumps on stage, stabs him around the eye, the neck. He's probably going to lose an eye, might lose the use of an extremity when all is said and done.
The guy got the best shot with a blade anybody has had because his security in London is tight. It's gonna make a orifice reference, but anyway, it's very, very tight. It's a duck. Duck's butt. Okay, there's that. And his code name is Joseph Anton. And he's protected by Scotland Yard Special Branch and occasionally the British SAS and all that. And there have been other attempts. Oh, don't be the guy that translated the novel into Japanese, because if you're that guy, you were killed 20 years ago. And don't be, I think the French translator is eating his food with a straw, his light cream sauce with a straw. And this is all in the name of protecting the honor of Islam. So, of course, in Iran, state TV, which is all there is, they practically declared it a national holiday. Just crazy. But I mean, clearly the Iranians, for some reason, feel emboldened to go ahead with this stuff now. Weird, they didn't do it right after Soleimani was killed. Not a month later or whatever. They fired ballistic missiles at an American base in Iraq. But that's okay, because they called ahead. 3 hours before, they called ahead. So nobody was killed. But so this is not clearly a campaign originated and directed by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in Iran. I don't know what is. I know that foreign policy American interest president should probably lean forward in this one and maybe make them heard. But again, that's me. That's what I said after the Bolton plot and Pompeo plot were released. This is Salman Rushdie, who I remember picking that book up in 1989, reading the first three pages and saying, this sucks. He should be executed for that. But I didn't say that. I don't call for violence. I call for an end to violence. I call for an end to traffic snarls as well. AM 770 KTTH, let's get you to work with our right-way traffic. KTGH Brian Suits here. I'm with producer Greg. And do I have to do a folksy anecdote that localizes me every hour, or is that just top of the show at 6 a.m.?
I think the more the merrier, to be honest with you.
Anyway, a great one. You can podcast the first hour, which is already, they were waving. The Radio Hall of Fame truck was out front at 5:59. Anyway, you can text Suits, S-U-I-T-S, to 800-465-8770. And I think that was such a good folksy anecdote. I might repeat it. So I'm not overhear other people's conversation guy in general, unless it's like unavoidable. Lots of loud talking people over the weekend in public.
Oh, are you jumping into your new folksy anecdote right now?
No. Oh, but,
okay. This is a segue to the
but
story.
But I'm listening to. This one time I was in the Air Force, and boy, let me tell you, classified information is really, really
okay.
What Trump did,
right.
They executed Benedict Arnold for that, you know, and all this. And I mean, you know, I'm not going to say, pardon me, could you take it down a notch or whatever, but I keep looking at the guy and he knows that I beg to differ, you know, or whatever, but we didn't get into it, but he's holding forth. Of course, I wouldn't like unless I locked the door of my windowless, you know, kidnapper van. I don't subject people to this. But
well, and I'm still forming my conclusion about the FBI's search at Mar-a-Lago, as I think a lot of Americans are, because we're not experts in this field, nor are we privy to every bit of information. And some has been revealed. There's been sort of a drip, drip,
well, okay,
drip.
Okay, I don't want. Okay, but let me. I have to get this out. What I want to talk about is everything you heard over the weekend, and I saw everything about, well, Hillary Clinton, an FBI investigation, because she had no business with a private server. Correct. Well, David Petraeus, blah blah blah, warrant classified information. Correct. And then the CIA director before him, these guys lifting things for their memoir or whatever that are still classified. Bradley Manning, taking video and other documents, State Department cables, and just giving them to WikiLeaks. Yeah, correct. There's a gigantic difference, and no one really gets this. Bradley Manning's title was E4, Bradley Manning. David Petraeus's title was director of the CIA. Hillary Clinton, her title was Secretary of State, former senator from New York. At no point were any of those people ever the president of the United States. So here's a really weird deal about what I've seen all weekend long from people who once held a clearance or whatever. And for the record, I held a secret clearance. I was read in twice for other stuff, and I'll explain this in a second. But the president of the United States, like I said last week when this first broke, is the ultimate declassification authority. And then I heard also this weekend, yeah, but that's not, there's a procedure. That's not the procedure. No, the procedure is whatever the president says it is. So that's why even if they found top secret SCI information and about him meeting Kim Jong-un or a keepsake, a cocktail napkin with Dennis Rodman's cell phone number on it or whatever, if the president says his procedure was to point to it and say declassified, then that's what it is. If someone else didn't go through the process of putting a stamp on it, that's the way it is. But the president gets to do this. You see, it's a pipeline, folks. The person who originates the content, who originates the piece of information, because let's say a briefing has 9 different elements in it. And one person is the human intelligence contributor, and so this is top secret. Another person is the geographic briefer of the target house or whatever, and that's classified. Another person provides really whiz-bang, super classified electronic intelligence that is top secret, special or sensitive compartmentalized information. They will sit there, they can classify it, and whoever originates the material gets to classify it. So the NSA gets to say, hey, look, this stuff is so sensitive, it's TSSCI. So the briefer has to be cleared for that. The briefer at that point, I mean, literally in briefings, they'll say, who is not TSSCI? And whatever, if you don't throw your hand up in the air, if you're in uniform, you're on active duty, you can be nailed. You throw your hand in the air and say, not me, and you leave the room. There might be an antechamber in the skiff that you're in, the special compartmentalized information facility all day or whatever. But the obstruction of justice thing is a different deal. Okay, that's a different deal. But when Donald Trump was president, he was the guy. And there is no man's above the law. Well, one man is above a top secret SCI. I'll tell you that. It's the president, whether it's Obama or whatever. And overwhelmingly, most American presidents have not come from that world, right? So they're blown away by a lot of this. George H.W. Bush, Bush 41, was a different dog. He was the director of the CIA. He was the ambassador to China. He knew that world. Right. So he didn't mess around with it. Your correct reaction at first pass should be you should be blown away by this. And so did Trump play fast and loose with the norms? It would appear so. But did he violate the Espionage Act and all that? Well, if he says he had a procedure and the procedure was he pointed to stuff and said, stuff, yea and verily, you are hereby declassified, then that's his procedure. He's the president. He can call the commandant of the Marine Corps and say, the Marines wear pink uniforms from this point forward. Now, the commandant can say, I'd advise against that, sir, and I'm going to email my resignation right now. Then you say, oh, really? Why? Well, it's not very tactical. And we need a uniform that is practical, but also we can go into combat with it. Oh, OK, my bad. I didn't know. Good thing I bounced this off of you. Just said the wife likes pink and she likes the Marines, so I thought I would surprise her for her birthday. All right, good talk. Bye-bye. You know, if there's someone who could not say, you know what, the entire national security and intelligence community is used to this convention. We need to follow this just for efficiency's sake. Apparently, you know, this is not the guy, but did he have classified stuff? Or did the FBI not know that it was already declassified and just not marked or whatever? That's why I'm not as upset by this, because my title has never been President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief. My title was Fire Support Officer, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 161 Infantry, not POTUS, So anyway, that's what you're not hearing anywhere on national media. And so, like I said, well, back in a second. Anyway, someone addressed that in an email in a complimentary way. Believe it or not. Back in a second, AM 770 KTTH. AM 770 KTTH, Brian Suits here. And very quickly, by the way, credit card debt is at a historic level now. Everyone's taking out credit cards. $16 trillion here at the right at the edge of the spicy times that are coming. Because talking about the classification system and whether or not the president had the authority, of course he does, and all that. And someone said, well, what is sensitive compartmentalized information or specialized compartmentalized information? And the best I can do is give you a folksy anecdote. And it's that in my infantry company's area of operational responsibility, or AOR, there was this one government agency, not of the Pentagon, that we called other government agency. And they would occasionally do raids with our input, with our expertise. And in my specific area, twice there were two times that I was called to a briefing for just one segment of the briefing, and I did not have a top secret SCI. I had top secret, and they would read me in for a very, very narrow bit of information that I had in my noodle slash noggin, and they would show me. They would show me material that was highly classified in 2005. It's since been declassified, but, you know, buy me a drink. I'll tell you all about it. There's a local connection to the company that did that. But anyway, they would show me stuff about one specific part of a briefing. But I was not there for the beginning of the briefing, the middle bit, who the target was, if there was a target at all. I would just be brought in and shown something that I would have a specific expertise in because physically I knew it. And then they would tell me to F off, and that meant leave the skiff, go back to my fob and play Xbox. And then several months later, it happened again. And pretty much the same thing. And that's compartmental. In other words, I didn't know, is it a building? Is it a tar? I was asked about an area. And so I didn't know when, where, who, what. I do know that something happened after that briefing several days later. And then same thing happened a couple of months down the road. I was brought in for something else. And a few days later, a thing happened. And so I concluded it was reasonable for me to conclude that they were connected. But that's what they mean by compartmentalized. So there. So I think that this search warrant, and what hasn't been said all weekend long, was when people are upset about, oh, the classification. When I was in the Air Force and I had to carry the secret code to the thing. You know, you like I say, read your job title. You know, were you customer experience? Were you the president of the United States? You didn't have that authority. The obstruction of justice thing is a completely different animal. Okay, completely different deal. Remember that Nixon resigned. He wasn't impeached. He resigned before the impeachment. But one of the articles was going to be obstruction of justice in attempting to impede the investigation of the Watergate break-in, protect those responsible, blah, 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 blah. Probably would have at the trial in the Senate would have been found guilty. So he resigned. The president can be charged with that after the fact or when they're present. In the case of Nixon, that's a different deal. The classified stuff is not a thing. Now I want to play this Andrew McCarthy thing. Is that what you're going
to
say?
Well, I just had a question for point of clarification here, and I don't know if we're going to have enough time to get to McCarthy's clip and my question before this segment runs out. Maybe we'll carry this conversation into next hour, Brian. But one of your central points, it seems, that you're making is the president is the ultimate authority. The buck stops with him on what can be deemed classified or not classified.
Or what's a procedure.
But isn't the central point here, were these documents declassified before he left office? I know he still thinks he's president, but point of fact, he's not. So he can't just simply go into his vault in Mar-a-Lago and write the word not in front of the word classified and say, well, it was not classified.
But he was president until noon on January 20th, 2006, you know, when they were loading the helicopter and all that. So if he says that was his procedure, because funny, New York Times today has a story, a pretty breathless story, presidential power to declassify information explained. And it goes down how sacrosanct and holy classified information is. That when you get down to, can presidents declassify matters directly? The answer is yes, because it is ultimately their constitutional authority. Then blah, 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 goes on. Do presidents have to obey the usual procedures? Question mark. There is no Supreme Court precedent definitively answering that question. So, you know, good luck being 12-0 with a jury
The potential for an obstruction of justice charge relate to how cooperative Trump and his camp have been with authorities? Because I read that a Trump lawyer in June of this year said to law enforcement that they have already turned over every possible classified document that they had.
That's the rub. That apparently that subpoena from June listed, you know, the this and the this and this, and that's not what was produced. And if they can say it's at the direction of Trump, but anyway, that the obstruction thing is one thing. By the way, doesn't in any way, shape, or form disqualify him for running again. The Constitution doesn't say anything about it, and you can't be convicted of obstruction of justice. Or whatever. How long is the first Andrew McCarthy?
Oh, well, you can actually, cut it off whenever you want.
Let me go back to Bill Maher because I think Bill Maher must be a listener of the Brian Stewart Show here on AM 770 KTTH. He said this on Friday night as part of the Trump talk on his show.
His fortune was finally falling. The big lie was finally losing momentum. DeSantis was beating him in the polls. You know who hates this more than anybody? DeSantis. DeSantis, look, I had this in the bag, and now I got to run against President Martyr. And this is saving Trump politically.
He's absolutely correct. And DeSantis knows this better than anyone. He was at, Turning Point USA, and he said this.
These agencies have now been weaponized to be used against people that the government doesn't like. And you look at the raid at Mar-a-Lago, and I'm trying to remember, maybe someone here can remind me about when they did a search warrant at Hillary's house in Chappaqua, when she had a rogue server and she was laundering classified information. I don't remember them doing that. I do remember them manufacturing a false conspiracy theory about Russia collusion.
More of that next hour. Yeah, there you go. This is blowing up in their face. That's my bold prediction, Cotton. That's a bold prediction, Cotton. Back in the second AM 770 KTTH, Brian Suter.